Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Parker in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria investigates a fuel tanker explosion that kills over 140.
The police said the fuel tanker driver lost control of his vehicle and crashed after he veered off the road to avoid colliding with a moving truck.
Mozambique's ruling party candidate is poised to win the presidency. Meanwhile, opposition candidate Venancio Mondlane led a protest on Wednesday to say he won the election. South African artists and influencers with albinism fight the stigma. Human Rights Watch urges Tanzania's government to reverse the deteriorating human rights situation in the country.
The government has been clamping down on the political opposition and independent media over the last couple of weeks. It's really concerning because there are upcoming local elections in November and the general elections next year.
And a growing number of young women in the United States say that the right to abortion is a top election issue. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian authorities in northwest Jigawa State say they are investigating the cause of a fuel tanker crash and explosion that killed over 140 people and injured dozens more early on Wednesday. It is Nigeria's second major tanker disaster in 1 month. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The Jigawa State Police Command said it had launched an investigation into Wednesday's accident in the village of Majia. The police said the fuel tanker driver lost control of his vehicle and crashed after he veered off the road to avoid colliding with a moving truck. Officials say the accident caused fuel to spill out of the tanker. Within minutes, the gasoline ignited, causing an explosion. Dozens who were injured in the blast are receiving treatment at local hospitals. Jigawa State Police spokesperson Lawan Shisu Adam spoke to VOA via phone.
The fire was quenched down by the effort of the fire service, and everything is calm down there. Currently, everybody is evacuated from the place now. Some of them are critically injured, while some are not severely injured like that, but they are receiving treatment at the hospital. For now, the investigation is still ongoing about what caused the tanker to fall down, but the driver lost control.
Fuel tanker accidents are common in Nigeria, where most of the 50 million liters of gasoline consumed daily gets to the gas stations and end users via poorly maintained roads. Nigeria's Federal Road Safety Corps says the country recorded more than 1,500 tanker accidents and 535 deaths in 2020 alone. Last month, 48 people were killed in Nigeria's Niger State when another tanker overturned and exploded. Jigawa State resident Abdullahi Yawali says it is the economic situation that pushes people to rush toward overturned tankers despite the danger.
People get their jerry can, they start taking the petroleum. And we are living in that critical condition in Nigeria. People are getting way to success. So that is why. And because, you know, if you take that petroleum, they will sell it. And there are many small boys that don't reach 10 years, 9 years, 8 years in that accident.
Fuel prices have jumped sixfold since President Bola Tinubu ended fuel subsidies last year. Jigawa State officials say they will try to dissuade citizens from scooping up fuel at tanker accident scenes. But until the citizens are less desperate, they may continue to risk it all. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Daniel Chapo, the presidential candidate of Mozambique's ruling party, is comfortably leading the vote count in 9 of the country's provinces and appears set to become the country's next president. His closest challenger was running a distant second Wednesday as vote counting from last week's election continued. Charles Maguiro reports from Mozambique's capital, Maputo.
Preliminary results from Wednesday's election announced so far show Daniel Chapo leading with over 50% of the vote in 9 of Mozambique's 11 provinces. In the capital, Maputo, Chapo is ahead with over 53%, followed by independent candidate Venancio Mondlane at just under 34%. Chapo has led at every polling station counted, according to the chairperson of the Maputo Provincial Election Commission, Lucilia Sitoy.
Daniel Francisco Chapo, 650.
She says Daniel Francisco Chapo, 656,056, which corresponds to 68.02. Venacio Antonio Bila Mondane, 260,792, which corresponds to 27.04%. The two other presidential candidates, Osuf Momat of the opposition Renamo Party, polled 9.6% of the vote in Maputo, followed by Lutero Simango of Mozambique Democratic Movement, MDM, with 2.86%. A similar scenario is also occurring in the central province of Zambezia, traditionally an opposition stronghold. There, Chapo is leading with 73%, with Mondlane a distant second with 14.7%. In Sofala province, another long-time opposition stronghold, Chapo held 65% of the vote. Turnout in Wednesday's election was relatively low, less than 50%. According to data so far showed by electoral bodies, close to 9 million of Mozambique's 17 million registered voters did not vote. In the northern province of Nampula, the largest constituency in the country, more than 2 million voters stayed home and tens of thousands cast blank votes, a common form of protest in Mozambique showing dissatisfaction with all the candidates. Final results are expected in about 2 weeks. Independent political analyst Dercio Alfazema says the next president faces high expectations from the public.
Our expectations are number one is
to be well governed, so we have a challenge to obtain a better result. The people want the end of corruption. We are looking for more security. We are looking for more health service and the quality of education. The extension of the services such as infrastructure. We also have the problem of terrorism in the north. The kidnappings, the young people are looking for jobs and some opportunities. The president-elect will be sworn into office in January when current president Philippe Nyusi, who is barred by the constitution from running again, steps down at the end of his second five-year term. Charles Mangwiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
The final results on Mozambique's October 9 parliamentary and presidential elections are expected October 24. However, results from 9 provinces released on Wednesday showed the ruling Frelimo Party candidate Daniel Chapo ahead with 53% and independent candidate Venancio Mondlane a distant second. But on Wednesday, Mondlane led a march in the northern city of Nampula to denounce the results. Borges Namari is an election observer from the Institute for Security Studies, a Pan-African think tank headquartered in Pretoria, South Africa. He tells me that there were reports of gunfire at Nampula rally leading to heightened tension in the country.
We saw on Tuesday that the Attorney General Office issued a first statement appealing for calm to the candidates, most importantly the opposition candidates, to avoid speech that can trigger violence. However, the second most voted candidate, Venancio Mondlane, is doing a parallel vote count, and he says that he won the election, and he broadcasts the presentation of his results in a Facebook account with more than 500,000 followers. So this is watched by hundreds of thousands of people, mostly young people. Then Attorney General issued another statement yesterday to say that he should stop to publish that result. So I think that was a trigger of a tension which we see now. So Venancio Mondlane responded with a hard speech accusing the Attorney General of being a propaganda unit for the ruling Frelimo, but also inviting young people to come out to the street for demonstration. That was yesterday evening. And today, Venancio Mondlane, in the morning, he flew to Nampula province. He started demonstration with thousands of young people. Then there were kind of gunshot from the police, which tried to block the demonstration. and some people have been injured seriously, taken to hospital. The figures are not very clear. I'm not in Nampula, but according to Human Rights Defend, the journalists who are in Nampula, almost six people have been there, and Vanessa Mungano was rescued by his supporters to a place which is unknown now.
So the independent candidate, Mungani, is he okay at this moment? Do people know his whereabouts?
None. So there were a lot of speculation. Some people saying that he was rescued by Amnesty International to a kind of a safe house because he was surrounded by police and fearing on his life. Others saying that he was rescued by his supporters. However, until Vanessa Mungano personally come out and say where he is, I think there will remain speculations. Generally, Vanessa Mungano broadcasts every day a live stream on Facebook, but today he did not. This happening yet. So generally at 9 p.m. he broadcast this live, updating the result and giving a speech, what he calls communication to the nation. So far, it did not happen this evening. So this increased the speculation about his location.
Borges Namire is an election observer from the Institute for Security Studies, a Pan-African think tank headquartered in Pretoria, South Africa. He was speaking with me from Maputo, Mozambique. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 17th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Human Rights Watch has urged the Tanzanian government to take urgent steps to reverse the deteriorating human rights situation in the country ahead of the November 27 local elections on the mainland. The group said on Wednesday that since June, the authorities have arbitrarily arrested hundreds of opposition supporters, imposed restrictions on social media access, banned independent media, and have been implicated in the abduction and extrajudicial killing of at least 8 government critics. For more on the situation in Tanzania, VOA's Douglas Mpuga Rich Oye Nyako, a senior Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch.
I would describe the current human rights situation as worrying. Things have been deteriorating over the past couple of months, particularly for freedom of expression and association. The government has been clamping down on the political opposition and independent media over the last couple of weeks and months. And it's really concerning because there are upcoming local elections in November and the general election next year. And, you know, if the human rights situation is getting worse in that way now, you can only imagine how much worse it might get in the future.
Have you gotten in touch with the government officials to see how this can be remedied?
I mean, we are calling on the authorities to stem the tide, to improve things. We're always open to engaging with them more. We haven't yet had direct conversations, but it's something we are definitely open to doing.
Yeah, given the current situation now, do you think a free and fair election is possible?
I think that free and fair elections can only happen in a climate that respects fundamental rights, the freedom of expression and the ability for the political opposition to organize and express themselves in the way that they are supposed to. And the indicators now with the direction that it's going in, and talking about the situation in Tanzania, really make it doubtful as to whether that can really happen, which is why it's so important for the authorities to really put the ship back on track, so to speak. I mean, just to flag that it's not just the general elections, there are local elections in just a bit over a month, which are really and important as well, and that's why it's really important that the government takes it now, urgently. It's really urgent. It shouldn't be something that takes time to put things back on track as far as the respect for human rights.
Oh, Mariam Nyako is a senior Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch. He spoke from Nairobi, Kenya, with my colleague Douglas Opuga. In South Africa and elsewhere on the continent, albino people are a target. They face daily discrimination and sometimes even death. But young social media influencers and artists are trying to change the narrative, as Kate Butler reports from Johannesburg.
The paintings, drawings, and photographs in this exhibition at a Johannesburg gallery all have one thing in common. They depict people with albinism, as portrayed by artists with albinism, like Athonkosi Kwinana.
My self-portraits basically looked at ideas of power. They told my stories of living with albinism.
Albinism is a rare genetic condition caused by a lack of melanin. Skin and hair lacks pigmentation, and those with the condition often suffer from poor eyesight. But as rights advocate Mpho Trape explains, the condition is often misunderstood in South Africa, where racial tensions still prevail.
You are white, but not white enough to be white, black, but not black enough to be black. So you are always in that space.
In Africa, myths abound about albinism, often spread by traditional healers. They are kidnapped and mutilated for their body parts for use in traditional medicine. Some people even believe they can cure HIV/AIDS by having sex with a person with albinism.
We are either good luck and they can, you know, take our body parts, or they can kill us because they say we are bad luck. But either way, we get killed.
That was Abongile Kantine, a disability inclusion consultant who works on challenging these misconceptions. Members of Gen Z are also trying to portray albinism in a different light. These are some of the members of the A Squad, a group of social media influencers who met at a school for visually impaired children. Here's A Squad member Ramon Malatse.
When we decided to open an account just to de-stress from our exams, because we've always loved making TikToks, so we decided, why not just make a TikTok account just for fun? And we didn't expect the video to get much views.
But to their surprise, it went viral, and videos of them dancing to amapiano music have now had over 50 million views, and their videos are opening doors. The A Squad recently did a fashion shoot for a well-known South African designer. The comments haven't always been kind, but Ramon says she and her friends are undeterred by the trolls. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
The White House said that U.S. President Joe Biden will now visit Angola in early December after postponing his first ever visit to the sub-Saharan Africa to deal with hurricane recovery efforts at home. The French news agency, the AFP, reports that Biden's trip will come a month after the U.S. presidential election and will honor a commitment he made last year to visit Africa before his current and now only term ends in January 2024. He had been due to travel to oil-rich Angola from October 13 to the 15 after traveling to Berlin, but he delayed both trips at the last minute as Hurricane Milton barreled towards Florida, where it killed at least 16 people. Biden would also hail Angola as a strategic partner and regional leader and hold talks with President João Lourenço to increase our collaboration on security, health, and economic partnership. Angola is a linchpin in U.S. efforts to counter growing Chinese and Russian influence across Africa. The European Union on Wednesday announced a 30 million euro or $32.6 million package to prevent irregular migration from Senegal as Corsicans risk their lives every year in a bid to reach Europe. Thousands die or disappear departing the West African country on the perilous Atlantic crossing every year, battling strong currents on overloaded boats that are often not seaworthy. Since the U.S. Supreme Court sent the issue of abortion back to the states in 2022, Democrats have mobilized to protect abortion rights, while Republicans have worked to restrict the procedure on religious and moral grounds. The issue is motivating voters to go to the polls this election year. Views corresponding Catherine Gibson has more from Nevada.
This is the next important step for Nevada to protect reproductive freedom and particularly our abortion rights in this state.
Voters here in Nevada aren't just deciding between Donald Trump
and Kamala Harris for president. They're also voting on question six.
Then we hope we vote yes on six. Thank you.
Laura Campbell is going door to door telling people why she thinks a yes vote on question six is so important. Campbell is the director of the National Organization for Women's Nevada chapter.
Abortion access actually saved my life more than once, and I just think it's important that after Roe v. Wade was overturned, that the state protects us.
But at an anniversary celebration for First Choice Pregnancy Services, a religious nonprofit providing alternatives to abortions, people like Deborah Costello are worried that question six will pass.
The fight could seem overwhelming. Millions and millions of dollars in our state supporting the abortion industry.
Nevadans already voted in 1990 to make abortion legal up to 24 weeks. But Democrats fear a second Trump presidency could overturn those rights, even though Trump says the issue should be left for each state to decide. If question six passes, the existing protections would become part of the state's constitution, making them even more difficult to remove.
We've seen lives are being lost across, 22 states have abortion bans, and we don't want that to happen in Nevada.
Jessica Ponce de Leon is a first-time U.S. voter. She planned to vote yes on question six and for Kamala Harris even before Campbell knocked on her door.
I don't think that the government should have any say over women's bodies or any of that. I definitely feel like women should have total control over their body.
Nevada is one of 10 states this election year to give voters the choice to decide how and when abortion should be legal. In past election years, putting that issue on the ballot has boosted voter turnout and benefited Democratic candidates up and down the ticket. Christian Mersch, a Brazilian immigrant who got pregnant in an abusive relationship and chose to keep her baby, is a board member of Nevada Right to Life.
Without life, there's no liberty, there's no other rights. If you don't respect life, there's going to be racism, human trafficking, and I just feel that we're disposable right now.
While the issue is motivating young voters, first-time voter Emily Costello says minds can be changed, and not all young voters will vote for Democrats.
If you can visually see how destructive that is to just a single human being, that'll change your mind instantly.
A nationwide survey released this week by independent health polling source KFF says a growing number of women cite abortion rights as their top issue since Kamala Harris became the Democratic nominee for president. Katherine Gibson, VOA News, Las Vegas, Nevada.
And that's it for this Thursday, October 17th edition of Daybreak Africa, We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do.
We live in the digital age, and parents across the world are dealing with the challenge of trying to manage screen time and to understand the content of their children's digital engagement. Even worse, some parents' use of technology is distracting them from their children. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will explore the new challenges of parenting in the digital age. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.